Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Natalie Saves the World, one podcast at a time. Today, I'm joined by Jonathan Aslay. I'm really excited to have him here on the show. Today, we're diving deep into dating, relationships, and how to find love in the modern world, where finding love is increasingly challenging. So Jonathan Aslay is a dating and relationship coach who specializes in helping women understand men, emotional availability, and creating healthy partnerships. So welcome, Jonathan. How are you doing
today? Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Likewise. Thank you so much for joining. Jonathan, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your background. Could you share just a little bit about your story and what led you to your current path?
Yeah. So I'll try to make this quick. So after about 20 years ago, after turning 40 and going through a divorce, losing my job and getting wiped out in the market crash of 2008, my identity was pummeled. Absolutely pummeled. And, you know, once I moved out of the house, I wanted a relationship. I wanted connection, I should say. Let me reframe that. Yeah. I said the word relationship, but what I really wanted was connection. I wanted some companionship and I wanted sex. Okay. And there was this thing called online dating. And relatively about 20 years ago, online dating was, you know, we didn't have smartphones. You know, I did it through a desktop or a laptop. And, you know, there was sites like Match.com, Yahoo Personals, right. AOL Personals, and such like that. And I thought you could type in what you wanted and someone would magically appear. And I remember going out on my first date, met a nice woman, something wasn't right, met another nice woman, something wasn't right, met another woman, something wasn't right. And in 1 year, I had over 100 first dates.
Wow.
I mean, I was literally going out on two a week.
Wow.
And what I recognize, and when a lot of times, and by the way, this didn't include the telephone calls and the text messages that never reached a first date. I mean, I was, and what I realized, I was substituting my pain through online dating as like my self-medication, my drug of choice. And I also was doing drugs and alcohol at the time too, because I was in a lot of emotional pain.
Yeah.
But it was interesting, Natalie, is I was making friends with a lot of women. And a lot of times I would, you know, some of them weren't really dates, just two people hanging out. And we were talking about our problems. So it was kind of replacement for therapy.
Wow. Yeah.
But in this replacement for therapy, I made so many friends and women would come to me and ask for advice. Jonathan, tell me what you think I should do to improve my dating profile. And I'd give my advice and I'd say, do this, do this, do this. And then I get a call 2 weeks later. I met this great guy. Will you look at his profile and tell me what you think about them? And I'm like, and Natalie, this wasn't happening once. It was happening over and over and over again. Wow. And I'm like, I've got kind of a knack for this. Maybe I should turn this into a business of helping women improve their dating profiles and then helping women understand that dysfunctional divorced guy. Because I was 40, roughly, and this is anecdotal, 75% of people in the dating marketplace that are 45, 50 years old are most likely divorced. I mean, you have some of the never married in that category and you have some of the widowers in that category, but most people are in the dating marketplace were divorced. And I'm like, and divorce comes with it so many emotional complications and so many emotional experiences. And I'm like, well, if you want the guy's perspective, then speak to somebody who has been through alimony, child support, visitation rights, family court, you know, and erectile dysfunction and all the other stuff that comes with as you turn over 40. So, so I turned my addiction, if you will, into a business. And in the last 15 years since this really started, I've amassed over 20,000 hours of coaching. I've done 3,000, 4,000 hours of personal development workshops, trainings. I have a neuro-linguistic certificate. I've worked on cognitive behavioral studies. You know, I've immersed myself in understanding human behavior. And so I incorporate that into more, I want to say dating advice that isn't some sort of, you know, three things to text your ex back to get them back kind of crap, that I really get into emotional embodiment of what it means to even show up in relationship as a sovereign being. And I can just spend an hour on that sentence alone, but that's kind of the Cliff Note version.
Amazing. Yeah. And I'm sure your services are more in demand than ever nowadays. with just the state of online dating? No.
You know, I cringed for a moment. I think people are experiencing gigantic dating burnout.
Yeah.
And they're also burnt out on dating advice. I mean, there's just so much of it out there. I mean, it's like everybody and their brother has something to share. So on some level, there is more of a need for it. But how do you, it's like trying to find, you know, like through all the weeds, where are the flowers to because there's so much advice that is on some level almost toxic. And I think that's, you know, yes, there's a need for it. But there's also a lot of demand or a lot of, I don't want to use the word competition, but everybody seems to have opinion about relationships. So
very true. Yeah. Well, Jonathan, you call yourself a guy's guy who speaks woman. What do you mean by that?
So, oh my gosh. So I had a woman I dated, I was in relationship, I should say. She goes, "You speak chick." And a couple things. So I've learned to really not just evolve, but really step into my emotional awareness and my capacity to identify my feelings and articulate my feelings. Now, traditionally, that moniker has been given to women, although it's an human embodiment to be able to identify your feelings and then articulate your feelings. It's just men throughout history have been taught to repress their feelings, to stuff their feelings, to you know, be stoic within their feelings. And whereas I've learned to embody mine, and because I am a male who tends to speak chick, and when I get accused of a lot of things like being a simp and being a wimp and being a beta male, which because even like Brené Brown says, true courage comes from vulnerability.
Yeah.
And I have a capacity to be vulnerable, authentic, and transparent, which again has traditionally been the moniker has been that's a woman's, you know, not role, but, you know, capacity versus men.
Tendency. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, tendency. Thank you. That's exactly
what I'm for. No, it's so true. But in my opinion, that is great. Like, those are all skills that we should all have, the ability to voice our, you know, how we're feeling and emotions. And I don't know why men traditionally have not been encouraged to do that. Do you have any insight on that?
Yeah. So, you know, there's this belief that being vulnerable demonstrates weakness. And, you know, there's this traditional expectation men aren't allowed to be weak. Women can be weak, children can be weak, but men are not allowed to be weak. That's that's an old paradigm. I mean, I was watching the movie Godfather, which was, you know, produced in 1972, but depicts 1946, 47, 48. And there's a scene where, you know, Marlon Brando, the Godfather, says, you know, women and children are allowed to be weak, but men are not allowed. And so this has been such an old script. Right. And but being vulnerable, again, is not about weakness. It's about, you know, expressing your fear by not bottling it up. But there is maybe a potential instinctual perception within women that that might be perceived as weakness. And it takes a pretty emotionally mature woman to recognize that that's a strength within a man, not a weakness. So, you know, there's a kind of this juxtaposition. A man might share his vulnerabilities, but he has to be with a partner who isn't going to judge him or perceive him as weak. And so that takes a level of emotional maturity on her part too.
True. Yeah. Oh, it's very complicated. And, you know, relationships are hard work. They're not easy, definitely. Can you share a little bit about the biggest myths that women have about men when it comes to dating and commitment?
It's a long list. All day just talking on this. I think that, you know, the one of is that, you know, men are commitment phobic is one big one that I've heard, or men are emotionally unavailable are probably the two top ones. Now, what's interesting, if men were so commitment phobic, then why is it women initiate divorce more so than men? I mean, I mean, we could make an argument against that. And that's true. That's, you know, that we could say men oftentimes nest in a relationship. Once they're in, they might, you know, just not go anywhere. But that doesn't mean that they're also working on, you know, the relationship either. So it might be that they stay committed, but they're not committed to the growth of the relationship. And I think that's a strong argument you know, that is a legitimate argument women have. Men aren't emotionally available is another one. Men rarely have a safe container, emotionally speaking, to emote. Right. So to say that they're emotionally unavailable, well, in the right container, in the right circumstance, with the right prompts, men can share their emotions and actually, in many cases, can surprise women on how much they have that capacity. But again, it's, it has to be under the right circumstances. So, and by the way, let me be clear to the women listening to this and the men listening to this. When in my podcast, I throw shade, I throw men and women equally under the bus. Men are unconscious and women are equally unconscious, even though they think they tend to maybe listen to more relationship podcasts, doesn't make them any better at it either. Yeah. Now, I'm just trying to be fair to both genders, okay?
For sure. Yeah, by the way, like, that's not the intention of this podcast by any means. I don't want to demonize anyone. I truly want to help people. Because I myself, so I mean, I'll share a little context. I was in a 7-year relationship. I was engaged. It's a long story, but we broke off the engagement about a year ago, and I'm 31. So this is really my first time dating. I was with my ex for 7 years. We met when I was 22. So this is my first time dating as an adult. And I feel almost like a divorcee because we weren't, married, but we were engaged, you know, we were living together for 6 years, and just entering the dating market now has been really shocking. I haven't really had to do this all this time. I didn't realize how challenging it was. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about this concept of Peter Pan syndrome in large cities. So I'm in Miami. Miami, by the way, is like one of the worst cities, according to all my friends and different people. It's probably one of the worst cities for dating, especially for women. What tends to be the trend here, and it seems to be the trend in all large cities, in New York, LA, especially, is this Peter Pan syndrome where a lot of the men here, especially in Miami, they do not want to be in relationships. They want to have fun until they're like 60. And I'm the age now, I'm 31. I want to have kids soon. You know, I don't have endless time to find someone to have children with. And this weird dynamic has happened where, actually they talk about this a lot in Sex and the City as well, the mid-30s power flip. But basically I've just noticed that a lot of the men my age do not want me now. They want a 20 something. And then, the later 30s or 40s, those are the ones who want like a 31-year-old. But in Miami, even those ages, they're not really serious. They just want to have fun until they're 60. So is there anything, like, do you have any theory or any rationale as to why this is happening? Is it from the dating apps? Is it social media? Is it just societal changes? It's very challenging. And I was not expecting it to be like this.
So, God, there's so many different rabbit holes we can go on. Let's start with one that comes to mind is that, and I have a son who's 29. Okay.
Yeah. So similar.
And, so, I mean, I get to witness what's happening in his age demographic. So, you know, first off, I would say a significant percentage of young men and women in your age bracket come from divorced parents.
Yeah, myself included.
And so that's one thing. So divorce doesn't just affect the parents themselves, it affects everyone around them. And there's an unraveling of your tapestry of your life. And in many cases, children, depending on the age that they experience this, you know, might have suffered a significant emotional trauma that has gone unhealed, particularly around the concept of long-term human pair bonding. So that's one thing that affects men. And by the way, women are equally challenged in just because you might want babies and children doesn't necessarily make you, husband and children doesn't necessarily make you, you still have these wounds too. You know, women have these wounds, fear of abandonment, fear of anxiety, that sort of thing. So let's just put that both in context. That's number one. Now, a lot of the conversation you're talking about with the Peter Pan syndrome tends to be men who have a slightly greater means than the average man. So a lot of this rhetoric by the way, successful men represents a small percentage of the population in Miami. It just Miami might, the cost of living there might be different than you say, you know, someplace in Midwestern Texas. Cleveland or Texas or something.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I'm telling you, I've done research on almost the entire US and every major city, it seems, this is an issue. According to, like, I've spoken with friends in other cities. I've done like anecdotal.
So if 80% represents it, still 20%. And I'm just saying we could make an argument that there's still plenty of men in your age category that want what you want. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's not 100% men are Peter Pan. It's not 95%. It's not 90%. It's not 80%. It's probably smaller than you think, but that smaller percentage takes up a lot of the air in the conversation we talked about. Remember, I started this conversation. You asked me, there's more demand for it. And I said, no, there's a lot more noise. Yeah. And I was listening to my son who shared something with me, and I go, and my son trusts my judgment. I'm like, what you heard is asinine, in other words, he's getting advice from people that are not qualified to be giving advice to younger same. Men. Anyway, so that's another thing going on, is that the reality is there's a small percentage that's making up a lot of the noise. So if we focus on, so I want to take it back. If you're focused on what's wrong, guess what you're going to see? It's what's wrong. True. And you're going to see it over and you could say Miami, but by the way, I hear this from New York. I hear this from LA. I hear it from everybody. And yet people are dating and falling in love all the time. Okay. True. So now the bigger question is the need for relationship that used to be for hundreds of thousands of years, women were dependent upon men for survival. And we are probably in the first time in real history, starting around 1950, 1960, and certainly, in the feminist movement began then too, is women's empowerment. And I don't like the word feminist movement. I like the women's empowerment and being in charge of their destiny. And it's increasingly grown. So much so that now there are more women in college than there are men. You know, women have higher paying jobs than ever before. There is a big shift. So a woman's capacity to take care of herself is at an all-time highest it's ever been in society. So I think that's a good thing.
Right.
Now, there is this notion that women are hypergamous, meaning they want someone greater than themselves. And if there's less men that fit that category, it might be perceived that there are less men out there, but that's because they're operating from a place of hypergamy. There's a lot of men that might make, 20% less money than you. That could be a totally amazing partner. He just happens to have lower generated income. And by the way, two is better than one. I wished a lot of young people would start looking at it from that lens, is two is better than one, than trying to find someone who has more than me.
True.
Okay. So there's a lot of factors that play into this. The biggest issue is we have a deeply emotionally wounded population of young people in the dating marketplace. Okay. Based on that trauma of divorce, and a lot of unhealed trauma. So when you have emotionally stifled individuals out there, and sadly, we are more focused on attraction, entertainment, romance, and physical connection than we are at the real purpose of a relationship. So the big issue I see for men is that they haven't defined a lot of men haven't asked what's the purpose of a relationship. Women have always had an instinctual purpose, make babies. Okay. Yeah. So that's biologically built in you.
But have a stricter timeline for that as well than men.
Certainly. So So you might be in a different, you have a need factor going on but I'm going to tell you something, making babies with the wrong person isn't a good motivating factor, and if you don't make babies, that's okay too. Your value as a person isn't predicated on your capacity to make babies. Okay. So if you have derived a certain value system from that for yourself, I'm going to tell you that's not the strongest position to be in, because if it doesn't happen and you don't value yourself because you're not a mother, then you might be 50 years old going, I have no worth. I want everyone listening, you have a tremendous amount of worth, whether you have a baby or not in your life.
And there are so many alternatives nowadays. I mean, there's, all the IVF and egg freezing and adoption and surrogacy. There are a lot of options for women to have kids on their own nowadays, which is happening more and more as well.
There's no doubt about it. But at the same time, the amount of resources it takes to raise a family and the amount of both a physical, you know, the physical time, the emotional time and the financial need, you better be really substantial in that area of your life. Otherwise, you know, if a child is raised without a father figure in their life, it's going to affect that, whether you're a boy or a girl, it's going to most likely affect the psychological aspect of that child. So there's a lot of factors that play into this, but I'm going to invite you to start looking at the glass look at the glass more full than empty. If anyone keeps saying Miami sucks, it's Peter Pan, Miami sucks, then guess what? You will just see, you know, a bunch of sucky Peter Pans out there. But if you start adopting it from a law of attraction, from a positive abundance perspective, you might find yourself in a different circumstance.
Yeah, it's very true. It is kind of like our thoughts create our reality, right? But
exactly.
Just curious, though, do you think this is, you know, because I haven't really had to date since 2017. That was the last time I dated. And it seems like there's a very stark difference. And I'm just curious if you think there's any reason as to why that is. Is it from the dating apps? Is it from social media? Is it AI? Is it OnlyFans? I mean, it just seems very empty, all the dating apps.
Yeah. So I do believe, unfortunately, the swipe application marginalized people. Instagram and social media has marginalized people. I think and also, what was the other one you said? Well, even OnlyFans.
OnlyFans. Well, this is porn, OnlyFans. Because a lot of men, young men now supposedly are more and more addicted to porn and OnlyFans. And even now they're getting like AI girlfriends. They're talking to ChatGPT like it's their girlfriend. And I mean, we can talk about that as well. Like, that's another rabbit hole we could go down. Yeah. It's just like the lack of human connection. I have a whole episode about this as well. But I feel like maybe that's contributing to why they're not bothering to pursue a real human woman, because they're like, oh, well, I can just go on OnlyFans and go on porn. Why bother with a woman who's going to reject me? Why bother with the rejection? Because a relationship takes work and it takes effort. And we live in this like quick fix society where we want everything to be instant. So I feel like a lot of them are just checking out, which is crazy, right? Like, especially in, you know, their 20s and 30s, those are such prime years for relationships and for dating. But it just seems, like I said, I've just noticed like a stark difference. And I'm wondering if all these digital factors are contributing or if it's something wider. Like, it seems also like the desire to have children is going down. Marriage rates are going down. And it's just, I don't know. I see it as like a crisis. Like, I'm very concerned for what's going to happen.
No, that's a very fair concern. And I do believe, I jokingly say it's the Hunger Games out there, you know, I mean, it can feel like that. And well, I want to address the, you know, young men going to pornography. You know, I was raised in the 60s and the 70s, you know, we didn't have the internet, you know, my pornography was a magazine. Playboy magazine that I could steal, or a penthouse, you know, kind
of
thing.
Go to the theater, right?
I didn't do that younger, but I mean, that felt more sleazy, to be honest with you. Right. But I had gone once, so it was kind of a curious thing. This is the Boogie Nights era.
Oh, yeah.
So before VHS tapes came out, and, you know, VHS tapes came out and, you know, changed everything. Betamax first, I believe. So I believe now, because of instant access, you have a substantial percentage of men who have checked out. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
I think on one hand, I think the greatest challenge that we're faced with is that we no longer live in environments where we're surrounded, particularly a young person, isn't surrounded by single eligible people on a face-to-face capacity. I think that's one of the challenges that the internet on some level solved, but unfortunately it's gone too much to the extreme. There's this belief that, you know, I can just find someone better. I can find someone better. I can find someone better.
Keep swiping. Right.
So we can talk about the problems. I guess the question is, what's the solution?
Yeah.
And I'm saying this rather than look at this globally for men and women, I'm asking everyone that's listening to this is, what is going to be the solution for you? Because you could focus on Miami's the problem and their Peter Pans. That's where you could be focused on. Or maybe you can put your focus to a different direction. Okay. And that is looking at, and again, you've been you were in a relationship from age 22. Now you're back out in the dating marketplace. Have you truly healed from that relationship? Have you really examined that relationship? Have you examined how did you grow from this relationship? What positive things you learned? What did you not like about the relationship and pay attention to that going forward? And what are you most grateful for about this relationship? And look at it from that lens of objectivity and self-awareness, okay?
Yeah.
Going forward, you know, the reality is that 65% of all new relationships are happening through some online connection. And by the way, that's going to be 75 and 85 soon enough. It's our reality. So we either reject the reality, or maybe for you, it's like, look, right up front, I want to get married and have babies. Is that in your plans? And if the answer is no, then that's okay. If a man doesn't want that, that's okay.
Yeah.
Focus on the one that does, you know. But more importantly, you know what I think sadly is missing is humans aren't good at making friends with other people.
You think?
Believe it or not. From a dating perspective, I think what's really, and this is something I'm working on, okay? Mm-hmm. I don't have the solution for everyone listening, but I think we're so hyper-focused on attraction. And what most young people don't realize is strong attraction oftentimes is an old pattern in our lives that's being resurrected for healing, okay? Instead of looking at the person from a value base, from a friendship based, and not so much based on physical needs. I think we hyper-focus on physical attraction. And by the way, most humans have an overinflated sense of their physical attractiveness. You know, everybody thinks they're a 7. Okay. Everybody does, you know, and if we actually, you know, and by the way, you could line up 7, you know, 27s in a row, they all believe that they're a 7, and you're going to get widely different perspectives on what the general audience thinks about that. I think we have an overinflated sense of our worth and value. And until we really become objective and know thyself, someone knows who they are on the inside, they're going to be, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, and they're just going to experience disappointment. So I think the message I have for everyone is learn your attachment style, learn your love languages, work on your childhood wounds and adult traumas, work on your stuff, be aware of your insecurities and limiting beliefs and be objective about them and learn good communication skills. You know, most humans, no disrespect to women, but the woman who says, I want to make babies, doesn't mean you're good at communicating with a partner until you've actually learned good communication skills. Right. So just because you may want something and men may not want it doesn't mean that you're good at it either, is what I'm trying to say. So I'm a big proponent of people doing personal development, self-help, spiritual work, and therapy to become a more evolved person. And when you become, and I'm using the term more, but just, you know, I don't like gauging it in that way, you become a magnetic attractor for what you want because you'll reject what you don't want.
I'm smiling because my friends and I use this terminology all the time. You magnetize that partner. Like, it's pretty crazy. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I wanted to dive deeper into one of the things that you said, though, about attraction. This is something that I'm noticing as well, but I would love your thoughts on it. It seems like, and again, this is anecdotal, so it's not like research-based, but it seems like men, when it comes to like partnership and finding a match, it seems like men prioritize looks or the physical attraction. They're much more like visual, and women prioritize income, height, and maybe hair. The main, is that typically pretty true? I mean, do men really prioritize just looks and age? Oh yeah, age is a big one as well. Is that what you find as well? Do men prioritize looks more than women do? Is it both? They're both coming from an ego perspective with the looks.
Yeah. I mean, sadly, I would venture to say that a substantial percentage, and I could even go as high as saying 80 or 90 percent, hyper-focuses on men focus on looks and women focus on income or status, that sort of thing. I would say
that's status.
True, especially the younger generation, because you're bombarded with that. You're bombarded with such that, you know, is selling that. So
yeah,
but I get that piece.
I think it's pretty crazy as well because, okay, so I don't have any plastic surgery. I'm 31. Yeah. I think I'm beautiful naturally. I don't do Botox or anything or fillers, nothing. But I just think that that's kind of creating this really weird dynamic as well, because women are getting more and more surgery and fillers and Botox. And especially here in Miami, like, it's pretty extreme here.
Yeah.
And then if the only thing that men care about is looks, well, then it's kind of unfair, right? We could all just spend 50 grand on surgeries to get a match, as opposed to like someone like me who is now considered unattractive because I don't do surgery. Like, have you noticed that as well? The increase with all this plastic surgery?
Yeah, I mean, I would say for younger people, that certainly saddens me to think how many people have had
young people getting Botox. Surgery,
young people. There's an argument that could say having Botox young prevents wrinkles.
Yeah, that's what they say. But that's the same as cigarette smokers, that they want to get you hooked young. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So need Botox I'm just at 25. Saying, yeah. So, I mean, what does that say about human behavior and society? I mean, on some level, we are a very superficial society. Yeah. I mean, this started with Vogue magazine and it hasn't, I mean, it's grown since then. I mean, what matters most in my purview is, do they have care? Do they have solid character? Do they have good values? Yeah. Are you on the same page? Do you want to build your life with someone? And yeah, I said earlier, we are swimming in a sea of dysfunctionality, and it's the Hunger Games out there.
Yeah.
What matters most is you carve out your own sovereignty and give your attention to someone else who's also matches you on your values. And again, We do need physical attractiveness. And women are just can be as equally as shallow as men, by the way. I mean, I'm being, I like to be an equal opportunity judger. Women
for sure.
Equally as judgmental as
men. For women, it's height and hair. Those are things men can't control.
Looks they can't too, really, you know, they always say chemistry. But you see, what most young people don't understand is chemistry is often a reactivation of a childhood wound that has to do with attachment style, that has to do with something known as the imago. And it doesn't necessarily is not about relationship success. It's about working on your shit. That's what chemistry oftentimes is you're being served up somebody that's going to make you work on your emotional stuff. And young people they don't know about this yet. They'll find out about it after you've had this one relationship, another relationship, another relationship. And then you go, wait a minute, maybe I should work on my stuff and read the books out there to understand my human behavior, my wounds, all this stuff. Because until I believe individuals work on their stuff and learn better communication skills, they're just going to be repeating patterns over and over again. And maybe they get sometimes, by the way, just like a broken clock, there's always two happy marriages out of 22 that are miserable.
Yeah, so true. So I wanted to ask you about just like the differences between men and women, as we were talking about, when it comes to emotional availability. Can you break down like what emotional availability actually means and how women can spot if a man is truly emotionally available? Going back to the Peter Pans as well.
So I look at emotional ability as your capacity to identify your feelings and then express your feelings, identify your needs and wants and express those needs and wants. That's what I look at. And your capacity to resolve conflict within a relationship. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's the way I look at emotional maturity. Okay. And people that struggle in those areas are less emotionally mature than others. That's my terminology. Okay. I think by asking people more radically honest questions early on, like what happened in your last relationship, and people that throw the other person under the bus, like they were with a narcissist, they were with an alcoholic, they were with an entitled
mama's woman, boy,
you know, or whatever. Like if it's 100% the other person's fault, I guarantee you that person is going to be emotionally unavailable.
Mm, yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm going to be blunt. Okay. If you don't take at least 3% ownership on your part, then you probably don't have enough self-awareness to be in a relationship. And I know I'll get flack for this because Jonathan, I was with a narcissistic man. And look, unless you had to call a doctor, an attorney, or a policeman, look, if you had to doctor, an attorney, or policeman, then I understand you were with the wrong person, but then you better examine why you stayed in a relationship that was that toxic. And if you don't heal that piece, you're not going to be any, see, this is the fantasy. If I'm with the right person, I'm going to be okay. And no, yeah. I have to be okay to be able to attract the right person.
On the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, very true.
So to me, a person who doesn't take ownership, and like I take 100% ownership of more than 50% of the reason why I went through a divorce and some of my breakups, I take 100% ownership. That's emotional maturity. Anyone who deflects it, in my book, is emotionally immature.
Yeah, very true. I agree. Well, you said that men often struggle to open up. Do you think that's more of a cultural thing, or is that women sometimes are looking for emotional depth in the wrong places?
God, that's an interesting question. Well, certainly it is a cultural, it's a societal thing. I believe younger men today, you know, probably, I mean, nobody went to therapy when I was growing up. A lot of young people have gone to therapy today. Definitely. So I think younger men are given permission to work on themselves more so than ever before.
True. Yeah.
I do believe, you know, we've been in a paradigm for hundreds of thousands of years, men are the leaders of the relationship and women have been property, subservient, and that sort of thing. And on some level, women are swinging the pendulum the other way. And I think that could create problems in their, you know, in the relationship because they've gone the other way. I certainly believe, you know, there's some fear factor for a lot of men because of the Me Too movement and other things that's caused them to be a little bit gun shy about approaching
women out.
Want to be perceived.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
in real life.
And well, by the way, you know, asking a woman out is a scary thing for a man. And I mean, just, you know, and there's this rhetoric. Yeah. Well, if he's not confident enough to ask me out, I would never want to go out with a man who isn't confident. Well, I'm sorry, but fear is riddled by every human being, you know, women and men included.
Rejection.
And so I think it takes a bit of tough, you know, it takes a bit of a muscle to just even, you know, it takes a bit of strength just to ask someone out. But I think more so, there are so many distractions, like you said, pornography, now AI and such like that, that I don't believe that relationships are doomed because sex with a person is much better than a robot. At least in my opinion.
For now.
I mean, unless, knows. For now, and who knows? You know, the movie, you know, ChatGPT is becoming the movie Her, you know, for some men and women too. I know a lot of young girls are using chatbots for boyfriends too.
Yeah.
I think what I want to convey in this message is you can listen to what everybody else is going through or you can work on yourself. Okay. Yeah. We could focus on society, men, and everything else, and there's a lot of truths. Or we can focus on ourselves. And I don't mean from a selfish point of view, but from an empowered point of view. And start hanging out in places where more empowered people hang out. That would be my recommendation. Just start cultivating friendships with men and women. Start cultivating opportunities because look at, you know, the fantasy and your generation grew up spoon fed, no disrespect, but you guys got spoon fed. I mean, we had to actually, even the tail, you know, I'm a tail end baby boomer. We still had to hunt for life. You guys have been spoon fed.
Yeah.
Well, now you're going to have to learn to hunt for what you want. And if you want to do it in the wild, then that means, you know, my son goes, for example, he goes to he learns salsa.
Wow.
And he goes, there's more women at salsa than men, you
I'm
know?
Sure. Yeah.
You know, he's put himself in an environment where he's trying to meet people on an organic level. And if we're hiding behind a screen, then we're going to be subject to what, you know, the crumbs that are being left and or sifting, trying to find a needle in a haystack.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, create your own haystack and fill it with a lot of needles.
True. Increase your chances. Yeah. Definitely. I try all of that stuff as well, by the way. Like I go to a lot of in-person events and networking and it just, like I said, we touched on this a little bit, I think, and I even had this in my other podcast, but the statistics are showing that men are less and less likely to ask a woman out in real life nowadays. And part of this is from the Me Too movement. Part of it is they're afraid they're going to be like filmed or put on the internet, you know, look at this creepy guy. He asked me out. What a weirdo, blah, blah, blah. But so I go to all these things and yet like sometimes I go just to make friends as well. But it is very, very rare. Like I almost never get asked out in real life. I don't think I have.
Yeah, but do you ask guys out?
No.
Well, I mean, all right. So
I might ask for somebody's number.
Do you have the power? Do you have the power to ask a guy out? By the way, Bumble, the women initiated, you know.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, I will message first. And I, sorry to cut you off. I will message somebody first.
But you could say, hey, would you like to meet for coffee? My treat. Oh my God, Jonathan, that's going to disrupt the whole masculine and feminine energy. And it's going to intimidate him.
This is true.
It's never been. Yeah. And by the way, I would venture to say, I know women who are married because they initiated.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's you true. Have every power to initiate. Hey, you seem interesting. Would you like to go out coffee? My treat. Okay.
True.
You know, there's no harm in doing that because there's this notion about masculine and like a woman's empowerment is emasculating to a man. That's the biggest bullshit I've ever heard. Let me tell you what men dislike: controlling behavior, overbearing behavior, dismissive of behavior, which is not masculine, by the way. It's just bad behavior. And it doesn't emasculate a man. It just makes him go, I don't want to be with you. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, when there's a power dynamic, when a woman makes more money and he's dependent upon a woman, okay, that could feel emasculating to him, but that's because of dependency, you know, not her financial strength, but she might be overbearing, controlling, and that could effectively cause him to lose his own self-worth, okay? But asking a man out, Natalie, let me tell you something. There's a joke by Rodney Dangerfield. He goes, I think I'm going to become bisexual. It will double my chances of getting laid. Okay. Yeah. The point is, if you start asking men out, you might start going out on more dates.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. I think exactly as you said, there are these kind of misconceptions. And because so many things have changed in terms of the gender roles and the gender dynamics, it is a confusing time as well. Because like on the one hand, we want chivalry. Like I still would prefer for the man to pay on the first date, for example, or open the door for me or do, you know, just small, nice gestures here and there. But then at the same time, exactly, we're like maybe limiting ourselves. And it is there. I don't know. The rules are less clear. It's more blurred nowadays.
By the way, I want you to be careful with the word chivalry. Chivalry means weakness on the woman's part. You know, a man is strong and a weakness on a woman's part. So I recognize why you say that. You've been sold a traditional script.
Yeah.
Men are supposed to do this.
Right.
But there's no real why behind it. Women are now making as much money as men in many cases, if not more. You have the capacity to go, hey, I'll treat. You have that capacity.
Okay? Oh, definitely. Which and I did with my ex.
Yeah. And so,
but not the first date. Maybe. It's a silly rule, though, right? Yeah. It's a silly rule.
I know it's a silly rule, but you know what? Maybe the rule should be broken.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe that rule should be broken. And I'll tell you a story. Okay. I had a first date with a woman. This happened a decade ago. Mm-hmm. We went out for Halloween and we went to a dive bar. That was our first date.
That's
we got
fun.
Dressed up
Very
and
fun.
Went to a dive bar. Nice. And we paid. And so I went to the bartender and I happened to know the bartender. I paid for the first round of drinks and it was time for the second round of drinks.
Yeah.
And I realized, why didn't I leave my credit card? So I was about to leave my credit card. And she goes, I have it. And I go, no, I've got it. She goes, no, I've got it, Jonathan. I go, I've got it. And it gave a little pissing match, right? Now, some women would say, oh my God, she was in her masculine energy. Okay. Yeah. But let me tell you why she did this. So she puts her hand on my arm and said, Jonathan, I really appreciated you treated for the first round of drinks. Will you allow me to show you my appreciation by treating you because I think you're worth it? Can you receive is what she said to me next. Okay. Now, in my brain, my chin dropped to the floor. A woman initiating kindness, generosity, appreciation. I was dumbfounded. Like this actually, a woman like this exists. And so I posted this, I shared this story in a men's group of 10,000 men I belong to. And there were over this on Facebook. And 1,000 men responded. You know what they said, Natalie? She's one of a kind. She's a keeper. She's a unicorn. Don't let her go.
Wow.
This is where I think the issue about who pays, this is about the value of generosity. Okay. Yeah. And if you can't be equally generous, and some women say, well, I had to spend all my time getting dressed up and makeup and it was my time. No, this is an action of value and generosity. And by the way, what she demonstrated was partnership skills, generosity, teamwork. That's what she demonstrated. So I know I'm pissing off a lot of women listening to this because you guys are stuck in this damn paradigm, okay? Yeah. Even you are. But I'm just going to say, flip the script. Just go, you know what? I'm going to do this, not because I'm in my masculine energy, but because I want to be generous.
Yeah.
And over the years, I've had women where I picked up the tab, they picked up the valet. I picked up the tab, they paid the parking. You know, they contributed.
Right.
And that demonstrates partnership skills. And I'm going to tell you, you're going to get a lot more mileage by operating not from a place of expectation, but from a place of generosity. You're going to get a lot more mileage out of that. Yes, some men will take advantage of you. There are a lot of bad apples out there. I get it. Don't ever give more than, you know, a relationship should be an equal investment one other. Okay, I'm done pontificating.
No, you're right. You're right. I can say, like, at least in Miami, another very like strange dynamic here. And I think it's happening across the world, but especially in Miami. There is this dynamic here of the sugar daddy, sugar baby thing. I don't know if you've heard about this at all. It's pretty
been out throughout history, by the way.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's been a historical thing.
By the way, watch a Marilyn Monroe movie, How to Marry a Millionaire.
Okay? It's true. It's true. Very good point. And there's always been the gold digging component for sure. But in Miami, it's I think part of it is social media. Part of it is people want like images of themselves being photographed with this hot arm candy on their arm, going to date with this hot woman, whatever. And again, going back to like the physical thing that men care a lot more about, like attraction per se, than women might, although it depends, right? They both need to be attracted.
Pretty close to equal to men on the desire for chemistry and attraction. Not quite the same, but close.
It's true. And I think for women, it's like we said, it's things that men can't necessarily get plastic surgery. I mean, they could get a hair transplant and they could get new knees. Apparently there's like this surgery that can make them taller. They talk about it in that movie Materialist.
I know the movie Materialist. Yeah, so 6 inches.
The 6-inch surgery. Anyhow, but there's this big culture here of a lot of women are basically exploiting men for their money and getting like their whole lifestyle paid for by men. Like it was always in existence.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting? I heard Sadia Khan talk about this in one of her videos. She's a therapist. She goes, you know, the guy who's there on the yachts and he knows every bouncer. And I'm like, you're talking about such a small percentage, Natalie. Okay.
Yeah,
now I get inside the city of Miami is a little bit different.
More
but
visible.
The state of Florida is a pretty big state. Okay. So you live in, stop saying Miami, say I live in the state of Florida. You know what? Here's the reality. Less than I believe less than 5% of the American population makes over $250,000 a year. The average American makes less than 80% of Americans make less than $80,000 a year. And younger, and let's in your demographic, it's even a higher percentage because you got to add all the senior citizens like myself in this category, even though I'm not a senior citizen. So just recognize that you're talking about such a small percentage, but you are being fed. You have been bombarded with this belief. And it's to some degree, it's true. And I know there's a lot of YouTube channels, you know, pontificating this, but it's not the reality of what's going on. Okay. Yeah. The reality is the average young person is not rich. They're not flying to Dubai. They're not hanging out yachts. They're not going to the nightclubs. A small percentage of people are. And yes, it's a little bit more concentrated in the city. But if you went to the suburbs of Miami, if you went out a few miles from the dead center of city, it's probably a little bit different.
Yeah, for sure.
And where I'm going with this is, and if you were my daughter, this is what I say, you're listening to a lot of rhetoric and you're creating that as your truth. You're literally manifesting your truth when you've been consumed by it over and over. Well, guess what? You can create a whole new reality for yourself. We have the power within ourselves to shift our reality by making some subtle choices in the way of the information we consume. And I know you're here as a podcast to shine light and all that. And that's why you brought me on here.
Yeah.
You know, because we have a choice. We can focus on the problem or we can ask, what's the solution?
Well,
because
exactly.
The problem is too big in the area of men and women to be like, your job is just to work on yourself. That's it.
Yeah.
And I wrote a book. You can see it in my background. You know, I wrote a book. It's called Self-Love. What the heck is self-love anyway? This is what you should be working on. And the secondary is the relationship.
So,
all right. By the way, was I a tough dad on you?
No. I mean, it's funny because, my parents give me advice on this stuff, but they haven't dated in a really long time. So they don't really know how, and also me, right? Like, I haven't dated in 8 years, really. So Yeah. And I was not expecting this. I don't know. It just feels very different than the last time I dated, but also the last time I dated, I was 22. I had very low standards, right? I was 22. Yeah. I didn't care as much about compatibility or, you know, children or the timing. Whereas now my standards are very different and I am on a somewhat of a timeline. We're almost out of time. Speaking of time.
Oh, I can go a little bit longer, but I want to say something to everybody. Here's what's most important, because I recognize you're on a timeline, but guess what? You may not achieve that goal. It may not happen. Okay. But I think what matters most is Esther Perel says the quality of your life is predicated by the quality of your relationships. And if you're hyper-focused on the baby factor of it, you may end up choosing, again, a standard and find yourself miserable 10 years later, but you have some babies in the process. Yeah. So here's what matters most, I believe, is shared values and a shared vision of what you want in a relationship, shared values and vision. Number two, lifestyles that are blendable and compatible with one another. That's important too. And lastly, emotional maturity and establishing a growth practice within your relationship, which includes relationship skills. Those are the most important factors. The looks, the money, everything is secondary to that. But if you're focused on looks and money, then you might end up, you might buy a car that has no engine in it.
Yeah, it's very true.
It looks nice because it looks like a Ferrari, but there are Ferraris with Chevy 350. And by the way, I shouldn't bag the Chevy 325 engines, but a lot of Ferraris have not a Ferrari engine in it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, I'm definitely not looks first by any means. I think looks are actually the least important thing.
What about money? What about money?
I don't care if they're wealthy either. I do, I guess my snobby.
But did you see how you just paused there?
Because I was wealthy. No, it's not the wealth thing. It's education. That's where I'm a snob. I do not care that they have a master's or PhD or anything like that, but I'm a very, I like to have like deep philosophical conversations and I consider myself to be somewhat intelligent. I only have one degree, by the way. I'm not like a scholar by any means. But if somebody's like a, this is where I'm judgmental and because it's not necessarily accurate, I am judgmental on like, oh, he didn't even go to college or like, oh, he didn't have a traditional education, because then my judgmental mind is like, oh, well, what are we even going to talk about if they're just like someone who went to high school and they're a mechanic or something, which is wrong of me. I know that. That's where I'm judgy. I don't care if they're rich. I don't care. Because sometimes, you know, people who do trades are actually, you know, earning really good money. But I just, that's where I'm a snob. And I'm like, what am I going to talk about with them if they're a tradesman? You know, what will we possibly have in
rather
common?
Rather than focus on what they do, why not just talk to them and see if they meet you? And by the way, I mean, what is it? You can unlock the universe in a chewing gum wrapper. You can unlock the physics of the universe. There's a tongue in cheek that's from Superman. The point is, you can meet someone who's an auto mechanic and he could be philosophically brilliant and everything.
Right.
You don't know. But if you make that judgment, you could just recognize that you could, not always, but could be setting yourself up for failure.
Definitely.
Because what really matters most, and I understand the importance to have philosophical conversations, but you know what matters most more in my book is compassion, empathy, you know, sensitivity, teamwork skills, all those things matters most in partnership. And yes, you'd like to maybe, but you have girlfriends for that too, by the way. So just recognize that a partner may not meet all of your needs. Focus on the core needs.
Yeah.
That's what I'd tell you if my daughter. All right. I beat you up enough. I'll let you off the hook.
No, I agree. Yeah, definitely. I think that looks are relative. Compatibility, exactly as you said, it's ultimately just like what needs can they fill that a friend cannot fill, or your family members cannot fill. Definitely. I just wanted to quickly ask about dating apps because we talked on this a little bit. What advice would you have for someone struggling with the dating apps? What should they do, basically?
Well, so I mean, you're asking about emotionally available and all that sort of thing. Just recognize that I believe a vast majority of humans, men and women, are equally have weak emotional maturity and relationship skills. So let me just say they're not hanging out in some locker room or at Burning Man or something like that. But to meet people organically, I think dancing is so underrated these days. And I don't mean nightclub dancing. I'm talking about ballroom dancing, tango, salsa, that sort of thing. I think dancing is a great way to connect with people. I think, you know, networking events you mentioned earlier, I think those are great. But what I don't see happening is enough young people just putting together a room of young people and hanging out together in a social environment. So start with one person, have them in. Like, I went to an event where you had to bring someone of the opposite sex. So they invited, they took 25 women, said you would invite 25 men to this social gathering.
Very nice.
And start creating your own group. You know, starts with one, and one can build to two, two can build to four, four can build to eight. But if you don't want to do the work, then don't bitch about it. Not you, Natalie. But for those listening, if you don't want to make the effort, then don't bitch about it as if it's supposed to be, it's because magical. You guys are magical and entitled. You know, again, our generation, I mean, was one of the last generations where we really had to work for our shit, you know, that we're in we did you a disservice as baby boomers and Gen Xers raising you children, you know, children, because you haven't had to learn to really pull up your bootstraps. Now, a lot of kids have because they grew up with single parents and that sort of thing. Yeah. But I'm going to tell you, if you want something to happen, you can make it happen.
Yeah.
And again, we can look at the problem globally and bitch and complain about Miami, New York, all these cities and the Peter Pans and all that stuff. Or you can just say, I'm going to do something about it for myself. I don't care about everyone else. I'm going to focus on myself.
So true. You have to put your oxygen mask on first before helping others.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So Jonathan, quick rapid fire. What is the biggest first date red flag? They don't pay? No, I'm sorry. If you can't think of one, I can move to
My biggest first red date flag is when they bitch about their last relationship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And they don't take accountability, right?
They don't take accountability, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm not as rapid fire.
No, it's good.
I'm a little bit older. Hard. Time to process. Okay.
What is the most underrated green flag on a first date?
God, I want to say kindness, but
the generosity, like you mentioned, when she was willing to pay and chip in.
I think kindness and generosity.
Okay, awesome. What is a dating app tip that most people don't use on their profiles?
Oh, I think here's the biggest tip that they do a terrible job. They have shitty photographs. I see 99 out of 100 profiles I look at. Women are just as nice. There's an ambivalence, all that shit. So men and women are like crappy photographs.
If it's just like mirror selfies or like grainy photos.
Bad presentation.
Yeah. It shows that they don't know how to market themselves. I think it's, I agree. Okay. What is the worst dating advice you've ever heard?
If a man doesn't pay for your valet, don't accept a second date from him.
Oh, wow. Seriously. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, I heard that from a very prestigious matchmaker.
That sounds like a Miami type of thing.
One where the guy took a girl to Cheesecake Factory and some restaurant like that. And she thought that was beneath them and she wouldn't accept another date. I mean, this is the kind of shit you guys are faced with.
Yeah, I agree. It's pretty ridiculous. And then what's one question a woman should always ask early on in dating?
I would say ask, what does a relationship look like for you?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the purpose of a relationship?
And see what they say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Both men and women should ask it of each other.
Yeah, that's a good one. And like you said, the asking about their previous relationships and seeing how
since I said it earlier, but absolutely find out about their past relationships.
For sure.
By the way, a lot of this can be done on the telephone before you physically meet. That way, when you meet, screening. It can be fun. But you guys just text each other and don't even have real conversations.
I'd say
your biggest challenge in your generation is you text and don't talk.
No, I mean, I'm a millennial, so I like phone calls. But I think the Gen Zs, they don't do phone calls. Yeah. Okay. So this has been amazing, Jonathan. Thank you so much for your time. I did want to ask quickly, how can my audience connect with you? Where can they work with you or dive deeper into your teachings?
So my name is listed here, Jonathan Asley. Simply cut and paste that, put in the Google. The first thing that will pop up is my YouTube channel. I have a couple hundred thousand followers on YouTube. Awesome. I've got a website you can go to. I have social media. I have my book on Amazon. Those are the four places that you can connect with me.
Amazing. I would love to read your book. I definitely could use some more self-love and inner work. So definitely would love to read it. And thank you all for listening to another episode of Natalie Saves the World, one podcast at a time. We didn't save the world today, but we had a really interesting discussion about relationships, dating in this modern era, and how we can all work on ourselves and love ourselves first. So thank you so much for listening to Natalie Saves the World, one podcast at a time, and have a wonderful day.